conversation. That peeve is businesses who capture your personal information and then think nothing of sharing it with their colleagues and marketing teams and anybody else they think might use it, with the result that we get spammed with unwanted approaches from left, right and center. And hopefully that's all going to change on the 1st of July when POPI, the Protection of Personal Information Act, comes into effect. Not a moment too soon as far as I'm concerned. It's of course only one part of a much broader conversation about what happens with our personal information that is collected by businesses. And to talk about what is going to change and the implications of that pending deadline, I'm joined on the line by Carl Blom, who is Senior Associate at legal firm Weber Wenzel. Carl, great to have you with us. Thanks for your time this afternoon.
Hi, Pippa. Thanks for having me.
Am I right in thinking that the Act itself was actually passed by Parliament several years ago, Carl? Why is it only taking effect on the 1st of July?
Yeah, quite correct. It's almost been a sort of Damocles that's been there since 2013 or so. The reason it's taken so long is because it's very complicated. So Europe has had laws like POPI on its books for a number of years, and it's been a gradual increase as these laws become more and more sophisticated. And we really went from having nothing, which is where we are almost today, to having laws that are on par or maybe even stricter with Europe. So it necessitated getting the regulator appointed and staffed up and getting her an adequate budget to actually tackle these issues.
Right.
So it really just has taken some time to get us to where we are today.
Okay, thanks for that background. Now, my pet peeve of the spam marketing is, of course, only one very small aspect of why we need a POPI in the first place. There's a much bigger issue at play here around the security of our personal information, isn't there?
Yes, absolutely. So lots of people think about POPI as only being, let's say, about privacy, but it actually goes so far beyond that. It's a way of rethinking almost how we will own information that relates to us. So to your point around security, there are now very strict requirements in the Act for how our information can be used and how it can be kept. And you're talking about locked away in cupboards and things. All those kind of appropriate safeguards must be implemented. But I mean, going even beyond that, if there's a data breach, for example, following 1 July, if you're affected by that data breach, if your information is involved in that data breach, the company who had that data breach must let you know, and they must also contact the information regulator and give you enough information that you can actually take steps to protect yourself after that data breach.
Okay, that's quite far-reaching. I mean, the kind of risks that this is trying to reduce for all of us, Carl, is that the risk of somebody getting hold of our identities and using them for nefarious purposes, correct?
Exactly. So, I mean, that's the one part of it. Obviously, there's a criminal risk. There's a risk of, as you say, stolen identities and opening bank accounts, or people discovering they've actually been secretly married to someone they've never met. There's all those kind of risks. But there's also a more broader societal risk around how information is being used, and this almost non-discriminate approach of collecting all the information we possibly can about our customers and using it however we like. Those days under POPI are actually gone. And so now I'm just able to link, well, if I'm getting these five pieces of information about Pippa, what can I use them for? Does Pippa know I'm using them for those purposes?
Yeah.
If I deviate from that, I must go back to you and either get consent or find another lawful basis to do that. And then you, of course, can any time phone a company and go, what do you have about me? Why are you using it? And then if you're not happy with that answer, in some cases you can object, or you can force them to correct inaccurate information. So it's this whole suite of rights that's going to be given to us come 1 July.
Can you give us some examples of the kinds of information that won't be keepable? That's a horrible word to use. I don't know what the right term is, but that companies won't be allowed to keep any more going forward, or so sort of some demonstrate some examples of how this will work in practice.
Okay, so a very good example. Let's say that you sign up and you're a customer for, let's say, a pet store, and they sell you pet food. So they'd get all kinds of things, such as, let's say, your name, they get your contact details. They may even get your physical address so they can sell you pet food and deliver it to your house. Mm-hmm. And so there's nothing from the outset that they're not allowed to use, depending on what lawful basis they have. So let's say you buy something on credit. They may get your ID number, they may get your bank details so they can debit order you, etc. So that's all well and good. But the day may come where you go, actually, I don't want to buy pet food from the store anymore. I want to opt out. And so you'll tell them, please delete my information. And from that point onwards, it then becomes a very careful test of, well, what is this person allowed to keep? And really, unless they're required by law to keep some information, or they have another lawful basis to keep that information, they must delete it. So let's say an example of a pet store again, they may need to keep some records for a few years for SARS purposes. Mm-hmm. So for, let's say, those 7 years, they will keep records of payments they receive from you and goods they deliver to you in case they're audited. But at the expiry of that 7 year period, unless they have a legal reason to keep that information, they must delete it. And so you're going to have this cascading effect, or all this information of ours that's out there is going to slowly but surely start to be deleted or restricted following these expiry dates. And of course, if someone tells you, I'm keeping it because the law requires me to do so, and you're not convinced, you can still challenge them or report them to the regulator and say, I don't believe you. That's not a valid reason. Yeah. Delete it. And then the onus shifts to them to prove why they must keep it.
Carl, so for example, our listener Anna has just mailed me saying she's got an Airbnb property, and she says, I collect copies of people's IDs and passports when they rent my property. I have to do this for security purposes. How is Poppy going to affect me?
So that's a great example. So you think, well, Anna keeps this information, so when a person arrives, she can make sure they are who they say they are. Also, maybe in case they don't pay or anything like that, or they cause damage after they left, she can find them. Mm-hmm. But now let's say a person arrives, we pay any kind of tourism levy we have to pay, etc. They check out their pay and the place is clean. Well, then you go, why do we still need this information? No, when will we ever be required to produce it? And unless there's some law that says you must keep this copy of this ID, then at that point you must delete it. I mean, more than just the Poppy, you know, requirement to do so, it's also a good business practice. Because if you think, well, if you're hacked, let's say, in 5 years in the future and someone steals your hard drive or steals a flash drive and all those IDs are saved on that document, well, now you have a bit of a problem. Now you must phone people and tell the regulator. But if you just delete it because you no longer need it, well, then you can never be hacked because the information is gone.
Yeah.
And so it's also just a good business practice to keep only what you need for as long as you need it, and then after that, delete it.
We're chatting to Carl Blom, who's a senior associate at legal firm Weber Wenzel, about the, it's about 80 days away now, the implementation of Poppy, the Protection of Personal Information Act. If, like Anna, you've got a question, you're very welcome to either send a voice note or call us on 021-446-0567. A couple of SMSs coming through as well, which I'll get to in just a second. Carl, I mean, in terms of what we as ordinary consumers are going to see change, the amount of information that is collected initially might not change, but the way it's kept and for how long it's kept and how else it is used might change. I mean, what will be the, for example, those terrible spam SMSs, etc. Are those just going to disappear overnight from the 1st of July? I say with hope.
Look, I also say with hope. So really what's going to happen is that come 1 July, you're only going to be allowed to send out direct marketing that's unsolicited via electronic means like SMSs and email, etc., unless two cases apply. So either one, the person you're sending the message to is an existing customer of yours and you're advertising similar goods or services. So let's take Anne's case from earlier. She runs an Airbnb. She gets someone's name and number. She could send them a mailer in a month's time going, I have these dates available, would you like to come? Mm-hmm. That's obviously related to the same goods and services that she offered before, and so you fall within that exception. The other one is that you get the person's prior consent to send them that message. If they don't give you the consent or they just don't respond to your request, you're not allowed to reach out to them. Also, if they don't respond or they say no, you can only reach out to them once. After that, you can't contact them again. So you're going to find from this date, there's going to be people are going to, I'm sure, be quite creative around how they try and work within these restrictions. And they're going to take very broad approaches to what's similar to what they offer. And you may have consented to something 10 years ago and you're going to try to hold on to that. But the real point becomes that you can't show that consent or show that person is, already a customer of yours. You're going to be liable to a complaint to a regulator. And the regulator in the past, a few years ago, already indicated this was top of mind, given how many complaints she's received from inception around direct marketing. So I'm not one to gamble, but I'm pretty confident that come day one, direct marketers are going to be carefully scrutinized by the regulator.
The other category that's going to be very carefully scrutinized or perhaps cease to exist entirely, I guess, is the businesses that sell entire customer databases. Carl, what's going to happen to them?
So again, that's another tricky business to be in. And it all comes down to, what is the relationship between the person who has that data and the person to that data relates. So you don't need consent for everything. Consent's one of about 7 grounds you can usually rely on to what we call process personal information, which is just lawyer talk for using personal information. Mm-hmm. And so if you're able to show a clear lawful basis why you may need to do this, like a credit bureau, for example, you would find you typically would never give your information yourself directly to a credit bureau. And that credit bureau may, behind the scenes, give it to people you never meet, like banks or credit houses you're applying for. And that's not necessarily unlawful. But what is going to happen is where you have someone selling direct marketing databases, for example, they're going to have a real problem because you go, well, why are you selling this information? Mm. And if they can't say, well, this law entitles us, or we have this consent, or we have this agreement with the person that lets us do this, they're now out of, they're out of basis to rely on for sharing this information. And then, as you say, it's going to put them under severe pressure to get their house in order.
Carl, a couple of interesting questions coming through on SMS and WhatsApp from our listeners, starting with Anonymous, who makes the comment, I'm always very uncomfortable having to sign in with my personal details when I visit a business. Is that going to change now?
So it's important to remember that the Poppy gives you some rights, but it doesn't make them absolute. So let's say you come to a business and go, I would like to enter. Now, COVID has made it quite clear for us. We're asked to be given our names, our contact details, even our temperature, which is health information, so it's quite sensitive. When they say, are you sick? And normally this information is treated quite sensitively. So if you go into a pet store and go, no, I refuse to give this information, that's completely your right. But then that business can go, okay, you may not come in. And that's their right.
Okay.
And so there's always that balancing act. But the one place where it changes is if you're an employee, and you'll know that some workplaces must do COVID screening, et cetera, and report positive cases to the Department of Health. You can't, as an employee in that case, just say no, because it's a requirement by law for your employer to do this. So if you say no, you may very well be disciplined because, your employer is following a lawful obligation on it. And as an employee, you must comply or face the consequences in that sense. So I suppose, long story short, you can always say no, you can always walk away, but you must always be mindful of the consequences for making that decision.
Okay, so the same then, I guess, would apply to the next question. What about ID info at security gates where they're asked to scan your ID document?
Yeah, exactly the same thing. So, of course, the right you now have is that once you go to business once and you leave, you can contact them and say, well, do you still have my details on record? Please delete them. And now they must take steps to either delete it or argue why they still need it, which was new and wasn't there before. Okay. So that has changed a bit. But the fundamental position is if you don't want to give your ID, they may not let you in, and that's there in their rights to do so.
Okay. Another interesting one from Anonymous asking about sectional title complexes. What are the implications of Poppy for compliance at complexes?
So it's quite a broad question. I suppose the point is that Poppy applies equally whether you're a complex, whether you're a large business, or whether you're an individual. Unless you fall within a very limited set of exemptions, Poppy will apply. And so if you have a board of trustees for a section or title, they're obviously entitled by law to some information. They all know who's paying levies. They'll have bank account details to debit levy orders and things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's all fine. But that information must now be kept securely and may be only used for those purposes. So you can't, for example, if you're part of a large complex, have people who pay their levies. You take that information you know about them and then give it to a restaurant who's located next door to the complex as part of a marketing deal, right, and have them market to the occupants of that complex. Because now you're actually going so far beyond the original purpose for which that information was collected from the residents of that complex. So that's an example. We have to be mindful of things like that. You can't just take information and use it for another purpose. Mm-hmm. But as a general rule, the same rules apply to complexes and trusts and businesses across the board.
Okay, thanks for that. I think we can squeeze in one last question. Somebody saying, is it true that companies will have to destroy CVs of job seekers after a position is filled? What if you might hire again in future and want to refer back to them?
Yes, so job information is, it's treated like all other personal information. And it goes to a point I made quite early on, where we go, well, we collect information, in this case about a job applicant, and what we're going to use it for, to offer them a job, to have interviews them, etc. So we'll go through that process, and let's decide they get to around 2 interviews, we decide not to hire them. Well, that person has some rights, let's say, for example, under the Labor Relations Act, they could challenge it and say, I was unfairly not hired due to a number of grounds. So you can keep that information for, let's say, a year in that case, or a few years after that. If you can say, I'm doing it, so that if this person challenges the decision to not hire them, I can refer back to the interview notes and their CV to defend myself. Mm-hmm. But now let's say that point has come and gone. if you no longer have a purpose to keep it, you must delete it. Now, of course, you can always ask someone who's applying for a job and say, listen, we didn't hire you today, but do you mind if we keep your CV for 3 years in case a similar job opens up? And that person will typically say yes because they want to get a job, in which case you're fine. If that person says no, please don't contact me again, or there's your answer, please delete it.
Okay.
So that's the balance to be struck.
Carl, thanks. You've been so helpful and shared an awful lot of information in a short space of time. Really appreciate your contribution this afternoon.
Thanks, Opa. Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you with us. Carl Blom, Senior Associate at legal firm Weber Wentzel. And we will make that conversation available as a podcast if you would like to share it with your own firm, with your own family, etc. A reminder that 1 July is the date on which Poppy comes into effect. And there are, by the way, very substantial penalties thereafter for companies that fail to abide by that act.